Chapter 23. To Mrs. Glegg, lest, to so delicate an article as a lady's temper, the slightest touch should do mischief. People who seem to enjoy their ill temper have a way of keeping it in fine condition by inflicting privations on themselves. That was Mrs. Glegg's way. She made her tea weaker than usual this morning, and declined butter. It was a hard case, but a vigorous moot for quarreling, so highly capable of using an opportunity, should not meet with a single remark from Mr. Glegg on which to exercise itself. But by and by it appeared that his silence would answer the purpose, for he heard himself apostrophized at last in that tone peculiar to the wife of one's bosom. "Well, Mr. Glegg, it's a poor return I get for making you the wife I've made you all these years. If this is the way I'm to be treated, I'd better ha' known it before my poor father died, and then, when I'd wanted a home, I should ha' gone elsewhere, as the choice was offered me." Mr. Glegg paused from his porridge and looked up, not with any new amazement, but simply with that quiet, habitual wonder with which we regard constant mysteries. "Why, Mrs. G., what have I done now?"
"Done now, Mr. Glegg? Done now? I'm sorry for you."
Not seeing his way to any pertinent answer, Mr. Glegg reverted to his porridge. "There's husbands in the world," continued Mrs. Glegg, after a pause, "as 'ud have known how to do something different to siding with everybody else against their own wives. Perhaps I'm wrong, and you can teach me better. But I've allays heard as it's the husband's place to stand by the wife, instead o' rejoicing and triumphing when folks insult her." "Now, what call have you to say that?" said Mr. Glegg, rather warmly, for though a kind man, he was not as meek as Moses. "When did I rejoice, or triumph over you? There's ways o' doing things worse than speaking out plain, Mr. Glegg. I'd sooner you'd tell me to my face as you make light of me, than try to make out as everybody's in the right but me, and come to your breakfast in the morning, as I've hardly slept an hour this night, and sulk at me, as if I was the dirt under your feet."
"Sulk at you?"
said Mr. Glegg, in a tone of angry facetiousness. "You're like a tipsy man as thinks everybody's had too much but himself. Don't lower yourself with using coarse language to me, Mr. Glegg. It makes you look very small, though you can't see yourself," said Mrs. Glegg, in a tone of energetic compassion. "A man in your place should set an example, and talk more sensible."
"Yes, but will you listen to sense?" retorted Mr. Glegg, sharply.
"The best sense I can talk to you is what I said last night, as you're either wrong, to think o' calling in your money, when it's safe enough, if you'd let it alone, all because of a bit of a tiff, and I was in hopes you'd ha' altered your mind this morning. But if you'd like to call it in, don't do it in a hurry now, and breed more enmity in the family, but wait till there's a pretty mortgage to be had without any trouble. You'd have to set the lawyer to work now to find an investment, and make no end o' expense." Mrs. Glegg felt there was really something in this, but she tossed her head, and emitted a guttural interjection to indicate that her silence was only an armistice, not a peace. And, in fact, hostilities soon broke out again. "I'll thank you for my cup o' tea now, Mrs. G.," said Mr. Glegg, seeing that she did not proceed to give it him as usual when he had finished his porridge. She lifted the teapot with a slight toss of the head, and said, "I'm glad to hear you'll thank me, Mr. Glegg. It's little thanks I get for what I do for folks I this world. Though there's never a woman o' your side o' the family, Mr. Glegg, as is fit to stand up with me, and I'd say it, if I was on my dying bed. Not but what I've allays conducted myself civil to your kin, and there isn't one of 'em can say the contrary, though my equals they aren't, and nobody shall make me say it. You'd better leave finding fault why my kin till you've left off quarreling with your own, Mrs. G.," said Mr. Glegg, with angry sarcasm. "I'll trouble you for the milk jug." "That's as false a word as ever you spoke, Mr. Glegg," said the lady,
pouring out the milk with unusual profuseness, as much as to say, if he wanted milk he should have it with a vengeance. And you know it's false. I'm not the woman to quarrel with my own kin. You may, for I've known you to do it. Why, what did you call it yesterday, then, leaving your sister's house in a tantrum? I'd no quarrel why my sister, Mr. Glegg, and it's false to say it. Mr. Tulliver's none know my blood, and it was him quarreled with me, and drove me out o' the house. But perhaps you'd have had me stay, and be swore at, Mr. Glegg. Perhaps you was vexed, not to hear more abuse, and foul language poured out you o' your own wife. But, let me tell you, it's your disgrace. Did ever anybody hear the like I this parish? Said Mr. Glegg, getting hot. A woman, with everything provided for her, and allowed to keep her own money the same, as if it was settled on her, and with a gig new stuffed and lined at no end o' expense, and provided for when I die beyond anything she could expect to go on I this way, biting, and snapping like a mad dog. It's beyond everything, as God A'mighty should ha' made women, so these last words were uttered in a tone of sorrowful agitation. Mr. Glegg pushed his tea from him, and tapped the table with both his hands.
Well, Mr. Glegg, if those are your feelings, it's best they should be known, said Mrs. Glegg, taking off her napkin, and folding it in an excited manner. Be but if you talk o' my being provided for beyond what I could expect, I beg leave to tell you as I'd a right, to expect a many things as I don't find. And as to my being like a mad dog, it's well if you're not cried shame on by the county for your treatment of me, for it's what I can't bear, and I won't bear, here Mrs. Glegg's voice intimated, that she was going to cry, and breaking off from speech, she rang the bell violently. Sally, she said, rising from her chair, and speaking in rather a choked voice, light a fire upstairs, and put the blinds down. Mr. Glegg, you'll please to order what you'd like for dinner. I shall have gruel. Mrs. Glegg walked across the room to the small bookcase, and took down Baxter's Ain't's Everlasting Rest, which she carried with her upstairs. It was the book she was accustomed to lay open before her on special occasions, on wet Sunday mornings, or when she heard of a death in the family, or when, as in this case, her quarrel with Mr. Glegg had been set an octave higher than usual. But Mrs. Glegg carried something else upstairs with her, which, together with the Ain't's Rest and the gruel, may have had some influence in gradually calming her feelings, and making it possible for her to endure existence on the ground floor, shortly before tea time. This was, partly, Mr. Glegg's suggestion, that she would do well, to let her 500 lie still until a good investment turned up, and, further, his parenthetic hint at his handsome provision for her in case of his death. Mr. Glegg, like all men of his stamp, was extremely reticent about his will, and Mrs. Glegg, in her gloomier moments, had forebodings that, like other husbands of whom as he had heard, he might cherish the mean project of heightening her grief at his death, by leaving her poorly off, in which case she was firmly resolved that she would have scarcely any weeper on her bonnet, and would cry no more than if he had been a second husband. But if he had really shown her any testamentary tenderness, it would be affecting to think of him, poor man, when he was gone, and even his foolish fuss about the flowers and garden stuff, and his insistence on the subject of snails, would be touching when it was once fairly at an end. To survive Mr. Glegg, and talk eulogistically of him as a man who might have his weaknesses, but who had done the right thing by her, notwithstanding his numerous poor relations, to have sums of interest coming in more frequently, and secreted in various corners, baffling to the most ingenious of thieves, for, to Mrs. Glegg's mind, banks and strong boxes would have nullified the pleasure of property. She might as well have taken her food in capsules, finally, to be looked up to by her own family and the neighborhood, so as no woman can ever hope to be who has not the preterite and present dignity comprised in being a Ida well left. All this made a flattering and conciliatory view of the future. so that when good Mr. Glegg, restored to good humor by much hoeing, and moved by the sight of his wife's empty chair, with her knitting rolled up in the corner, went upstairs to her, and observed that the bell had been tolling for poor Mr. Morton, Mrs. Glegg answered magnanimously, quite as if he had been an uninjured woman, Then, there'll be a good business for somebody to take to. Baxter had been open at least 8 hours by this time, for it was nearly 5 o'clock, and if people are to quarrel often, it follows as a corollary that their quarrels cannot be protracted beyond certain limits. Mr. and Mrs. Glegg talked quite amicably about the Tullivers that evening. Mr. Glegg went the length of admitting that Tulliver was a sad man for getting into hot water, and was like enough to run through his property, and Mrs. Glegg, meeting this acknowledgement halfway, declared that it was beneath her to take notice of such a man's conduct, and that, for her sister's sake, she would let him keep the 500 a while longer, for when she put it out on a mortgage she should only get 4%. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.